This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Finding the right medication for depression or other psychological issues can take a few six-week cycles of different meds before hitting on the right one. And now geneticists have found that's because of the differences in people's genetic makeup. In the second half of the show, we'll encore a segment about a new genetic test that helps speed the process of finding the right drug. But first, if you plan to speed through the neighborhoods along the McGregor Corridor during daylight hours, you might as well forget it. It's the dry land equivalent of a no-wake zone with cars slowly passing architectural gem after architectural gem. The sightseeing for drivers who appreciate history, beauty, and design will have a hard time going over 25 miles an hour. Well, now it's possible to cruise these neighborhoods anytime with a bonus look inside these homes and a sidecar of history, thanks to a new book called River and Road, Fort Myers Architecture from Craftsman to Modern. It was written by a perfect duo, a historian and an urban planner and designer who happened to also be good friends, Jared Beck and Pamela Miner. They're here with me in the studio. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We are talking about the homes along McGregor Boulevard and the varied styles of architecture in the neighborhoods along that stretch of road. We're also talking about the history beyond the Edisons and Fords of the day. Do you have a question or a comment? Is there something that you've always wondered about Fort Myers' grand old homes? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So Jared and Pamela, you both are not from Fort Myers, but you felt that you wanted to put this quintessential glamour book of Fort Myers architecture together. What inspired you to do this, Jared?
Well, as you said, neither Pam nor I are from this area, and neither one of us have anything that will necessarily bind us here for long term. Yet we both have felt that we've taken a great deal out of this community personally and professionally, and this is something that we wanted to give back. It's a tangible sort of gift to the community where they can look at this in the future and see something that otherwise wouldn't be available.
So how come a book? Why? We were both on a preservation commission?
We had both been on the Lee Trust for Historic Preservation and got involved in some projects with them that didn't quite come to the fruition that we wanted. And just through some casual conversations and actually meeting for dinner after tennis every Wednesday night, we had this idea that, you know, Fort Myers itself doesn't have a proper coffee table book on homes the way that many other communities do. And so we wanted to have that, but we wanted it to be more than a book of pictures. We wanted it to have an educational component and whatnot. And one thing led to another. And before we knew it, we decided we wanted to embark on this.
And Pamela, that is part of that is your history background. You're a historian.
I
by
am.
Trade?
Yes, actually architectural history. I have a master's degree in historic preservation. So that is the study of buildings and structures, but as well the people who live in them and their material culture. So the buildings and also how people use them.
The cultural influence of the time and how that will dictate what's fashionable, what's, you know, I don't know if politics gets into it or anything. Can you give me a description of some ways that culture and politics or anything can have an impact on architectural decisions that people make?
Absolutely. As a historian, as I also taught at Florida Southwestern for a while, as my students would attest, that was the first day of teaching them what history is and what composes it. And politics and economics and culture are three components of our civilization. And all of our components of civilization do reflect each other, influence each other. So to think broader about the lives that we live and why we live them, for what we have that surround us, but also what we might create ourselves. But it really is a whole.
And then that will influence then how a home is built.
Absolutely. And we don't think about where that begins and it's that grassroots. It really can take one of these homes – and it's one person's idea, and then it flows to another person's idea of just color. It might create a color, or as we talk about using the tropical climate, back in the day, they didn't have air conditioning and you didn't have heating. So how did we live inside homes that just were out with the elements? So how do we be one with the element? And so large windows or airflow windows that match up together and all
airflow
that
would be key.
Yeah, airflow is key, especially in Florida, even to keep the mosquitoes flowing.
Yeah, keep everything flowing. Yeah,
keep everything flowing. So these are just human bringing those ideas and then creating windows and matching them up just to create a flow for a comfortable building to be in. And then you get that aesthetic. and you start to bring these ideas of flowers and geometric designs to make functional beautiful.
And we don't do that anymore. I mean, there is no airflow in my house. None. I mean, you open all the windows and there it doesn't move.
Right. And there's also a trend I'm hearing still what I do is I've owned an old home and redid the roof and put the air vents on top. Of course, this was 20 years ago. Well, now I'm having architects tell me, well, we don't necessarily do that today. And I just took a big gasp because, oh, buildings have to breathe. All buildings need to breathe. So I think that's an interesting trend and thought in architecture and that whole component of whatever is moving us towards that direction. But I like a house that breathes a little bit.
Yeah, it's interesting how these structural changes come about. And then and you just think you're going to overcome the lack of breathing in a roof in an attic, you know? So, Jared, your line of work, what do you do?
I do primarily urban design and community planning. And a big part of my focus is working in our older communities to try to encourage reinvestment to keep them vital and vibrant, like downtown Fort Myers and these neighborhoods that surround it.
Maybe reusing things that are already existing instead of tear down and put up new?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, there's great infrastructure that was placed. And when we look at these homes and in our, you know, historic urban centers, they're built in a way that we would never be able to build again. And they have wonderful character and charm and very unique to the times and the people who built them. And there's the cultural history. And as Pam was speaking to, and, you know, there's a fabric you just can't replicate. And so there's a tremendous value, you know, socially, environmentally, economically in reinvesting in those areas.
I just find it amazing that there are historic homes mm-hmm. in this area just because, you know, I come from the Midwest. A lot of people come from the North and they knew people were settling there. I don't think that people maybe knew that people were actually settling and building nice homes down here at the beginning of the 1900s. Well, 1920s.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, I mean, it's a different thing. So then you kind of wonder, well, how can it last in this tropical type climate? I mean, what kind of materials did they use that were so different that can make something stand the test of time here? What materials did they use?
Well, they used primarily materials that were available locally. So as we do go through some of the older neighborhoods, there are plenty of homes that are constructed out of wood and whatnot. Later on, of course, we moved in to the 40s and 50s and 60s with the more conventional concrete block and whatnot. I think one of the things, though, more importantly than just the materials they were made out of, and we see this when we go through these neighborhoods, is how well they're maintained. You know, materials, wood that has been on homes for 100 years is still there, but it's been properly maintained. And that's, I think, one of the keys that we just see. It's not so much the materials, but what we do to protect it.
So when you were in the process of finding homes that you wanted to ID to include in this book, did you come across any that were kind of heartbreakers that just hadn't been maintained? I mean, they probably didn't make the book, but I mean,
right.
Did you come into it? You see them from the outside. You think they're beautiful. You go inside and it's, oh. Avocado appliances still.
That is cool. We like the avocado appliances. However, it was more from the exterior. If we went past a home and we saw it was in need of a little TLC, we passed on that. We might have called and found out about what the status was, but we passed on that because of its condition. But the avocado, anything original like that, any original design is primo. We would jump on that in an instant. But it really was driving through and looking at what different types of styles were available. So we had some different criteria or started to formulate different criteria pretty quickly, trying to find different styles. Because actually in this neighborhood, most of the stock is in good shape. And so we lucked out in that avenue. So we had a lot to choose from, and then it just sort of became stylistically to have a variety of styles.
It's not an inexpensive place to buy. So if you're going to be buying in the neighborhood, you're probably going to, in most cases, be able to keep it up.
Well, today, and many of our, about half and half, some of our homeowners have lived there for decades. So it was a little more affordable back 30, 40 years ago. And again, being able to maintain them was key. And some had thought, well, I'm going to get rid of it now or even tear down and build new. But they were such a part of the neighborhood, they wanted to stay.
And then some people, maybe as they get older, they kind of lose some of the maintenance and things. Were you going to mention something, Jared?
Well, I think one of the other things, just to add on to what Pam was saying, is that from the onset with this, our intent was to document and showcase residential architecture and the trends of all of South Florida and really correlate both, as we were saying, the architectural features with the land development and the history and so on and so forth. In the end, after looking at all of South Florida and then narrowing it to Southwest Florida and then Lee County and then the city, you know, we chose this little pocket to really reflect what you would see in all of South Florida. And so that being said, we were also looking for very specific homes. It wasn't that we were looking at, you know, five different ones of the same style. In which do we pick? It was one of every period that we were going through. So I think with that, we were also looking very closely on the outside as an indicator and you know, doing the research to see what had been done through the permits and every other thing on the inside to get an idea of what the general condition was. I don't think that we actually had a one that we went into that was a disappointment. You know, they were just, as Pam said, they're really well maintained.
And you mentioned that they there are styles within the McGregor Corridor that reflect every single style that has come through South Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really interesting. Are there styles that correlate with certain decades?
Absolutely. You know, if we go back to the earlier parts of the book and even going to the materials in the wood homes, we have the very craftsman type style. So the bungalows getting into the late teens and into the 20s as we move forward. And I think one of the homes, the sister houses, which is one of my favorite, you know, it's a very contemporary, modern pair of homes that reflects the 1950s. And, you know, we go all the way to today and we end with one of our chapters in very modern and contemporary at the same time. It's sort of a fun mix and we reflect what is you know, not a modern home, but it's a very brand new home intended to look like mimicking a period of history.
Mimicking what period was it mimicking?
It's
kind of like a Key West style.
I shouldn't say it's mimicking a period in history. It's mimicking an Italian style design.
Oh,
it's new
yeah.
construction, but it was inspired by what the owners had seen traveling throughout France.
Yeah, and there is a lot of mimicking of the Mediterranean style. I'm not really sure exactly what that is, if it's Spanish or Italian, but it's all the terracotta. That was really the thing in the 90s and early 2000s. So every one of these stories has every one of these homes has a great story, but McGregor Boulevard itself has a history, and you were mentioning that to me earlier, Jared. Can you tell me a little bit about the McGregors and that road itself?
Sure. The road itself was once a cattle trail from downtown out to Punta Rasa and then later Riverside Avenue. There was a couple named the McGregors that had come to Fort Myers, and like many very wealthy northerners, they came here based on the advice of their doctor as they had a son that had unfortunate health ailments. Mr. McGregor did not live, I don't think, particularly long after they had been here a decade
About
or
10
so.
Years. Mm-hmm.
10 years. And Mrs. McGregor was a widow. What perhaps most today wouldn't know is that Mr. McGregor had been a business partner with J.D. Rockefeller and Standard Oil. And when he died, I believe he was reportedly the 10th wealthiest man in the country. It was tremendous wealth in the area at the time that most people don't necessarily associate with. However, Mrs. McGregor, and just like her husband, really loved this little community and they invested very heavily in it. She was an entrepreneur herself and a very astute businesswoman. And after he died, she continued to invest and own things. And one of the properties that she owned had been the Royal Palm Hotel, which was this beautifully grand property on the river. Who knows how much of it was a sort of a business decision to promote tourism between downtown and potentially the beaches. But the then Riverside Avenue was really a rough road and not something particularly pleasing for folks to be driving on. The cow trail.
Okay.
It'd become a roadway by this time. Nonetheless, she wanted to see advancements in the city and really push for them, and this was one of the areas. And so she had made an offer one day to the city and the county commissioners that if they would pay to pave McGregor Boulevard or the roadway, then Riverside, from Whiskey Creek down to Manuel's Branch or downtown, that she would pay for the paving from Whiskey Creek all the way out to the beaches. It's a tremendous, tremendous investment, a huge project. It took years to do. And I think in the end, Pam, correct me, I think in the end her total cost was around $112,000 or $115,000, mm-hmm. which I'm not exactly sure what it would be today, but I know I had done a number of years ago, just out of curiosity, that calculator. Mm-hmm. And I think it ranged anywhere from 80 to perhaps $300 million in value that would have been. It was just a huge amount, but it was a gift that she wanted to give, and something that then was so tremendous in that it opened up this roadway for residential development, and later on it would go into opening it for agricultural development. And just think, of course, Lee County was once the world leader in gladiola and the growth to the beaches and so on and so forth. It's a huge spine in Lee County that, you know, sort of came about because of her want and her ability.
What time period was that?
That she did it?
That she did that?
It opened in, was it 1914?
14, yeah.
15?
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, so right before the 20s. And mm-hmm. It's just not the cow town that people seem to think it is. There's a lot of money coming down here.
Oh, huge money. It was very much, though, a retreat, unlike perhaps Palm Beach or Miami. It was still the New Yorkers or those from Chicago were coming down to get away, but they wanted the calm, low-key vacation.
It's kind of similar to now, though. We're still more low-key, definitely, right, compared to the other coast. Now, Pamela, did you have a favorite home?
I do, and it is the cover. We were lucky enough to select the cover, and that's Villa Palmera. And it is on McGregor Boulevard. But what's interesting is, and the picture is in here of a doorway. And if you look, as long as you're going slowly, you will see this odd wooden door on McGregor Boulevard. And just before that is a concrete house number. And it says private entrance or something like that. And I would go by it for years. And then I was lucky enough to have the owners, Marnie Paulus and, of course, her husband, Tony. She was a volunteer with me when I was at the Edison Ford Winter Estates, and I had the privilege of then being able to go in the home and learn the home and experience the home as a guest and a friend. And I said, oh, that's what's behind that door. And this was actually one of our first few chapters to present to the press to prove our proposal. And it's a 1920s magnificent, one of the early homes, of course, had much larger property to begin with. So it was a great example of the original creation of the home and the property in the subdivision, the development, and then as development sort of encroached around it and upon it. And it's this hidden little gem behind this wooden door. And just my favorite. I just love the style. I love being in the home. And I was really pleased to have it as the cover.
What kind of people own these homes? I mean, is it kind of required to have a love of architectural history?
Absolutely. It's certainly something that we found with all of our homeowners, getting about half and half, I'll just say offhand, that have moved to Fort Myers from somewhere else. We actually have a lot of locals and have pioneer families or at least coming in the 20s or so who still live in this neighborhood and grew up and still live in this neighborhood in their 80s and 90s. So we were very lucky in that. But those who moved in, came to Fort Myers, typically had a job already in hand and said, okay, I'm moving to Fort Myers, Florida, from typically outside Florida, a few from inside Florida, and said, told the realtors, I want to live in a historic neighborhood.
Or a place that has character. It's hard to find
that. Exactly. And a lot of them work downtown or close to downtown. And so it was a central location close to downtown, and they came here with that intent, and they were adamant and found homes. And some of them, I think, are on their third home in the neighborhood, second or third. They've gotten larger and gotten smaller or built their own, so really dedicated to this area of Fort Myers.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's important to point out, though, that these are all private homes. They're not open to the public, but the book is open to the public. So this is kind of like the one chance you're going to get to be able to go inside and take a look and see what these beautiful older homes look like, and some more modern. I love the inclusion also of the mid-century modern ones and then the little more modern contemporary homes. So it's a really interesting book, and I want to thank you both for coming up. We've run out of time, so we're going to have to leave it there. But I want to thank our guests, Jared Beck and Pamela Miner, co-authors of the new book called River and Road, Fort Myers Architecture from Craftsman to Modern. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you, Julie.
And of course, we have links on our website at wgcunews.org. Just click on the Gulf Coast Live tab for today's story, and you can find links in there and figure out where you can find this book. Coming up, advances in genetic study have now made it easier for doctors to get the right medicine to their patients. But how? That's coming up next. I'm Julie Glenn, and this is Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.
Till I reach you. Rivers and roads, rivers and roads, rivers till I reach you. Rivers.